6:13. This is 1320 WILS. Later in the show, we'll talk about what mainstream media has said about Donald Trump's speech last night. They lasted a few minutes where they had positive things to say, and then everything turned around very quickly, and they went after him actually pretty viciously. And we'll play some clips so you can hear what was being said on MSNBC, and we'll get reaction from Ed Brodo. He's the author of the book In Lies We Trust, How Politicians and the Media Are Deceiving the American Public. Also, today is National Awareness Day of Self-Injury. Self-injury. It happens quite a lot. Young women, even men, are doing all kinds of things to hurt themselves. We'll find out how you can detect that, why it's happening, what kinds of horrible things people are doing to themselves. But let's begin with some of the thoughts that the Trump administration has, specifically when it comes to economic nationalism, something Steve Bannon brought up at CPAC last week. Also talked about the destruction of the administrative state. My next guest says he thinks the entire thing is a horrible idea. Bill Reinsch is with us, distinguished fellow at the Stimson Center, former president of the National Foreign Trade Council. Bill, great to have you on WILS.
Thanks. Nice to be back with you, as always.
Yeah, now, when you were at the National Foreign Trade Council, what kinds of trade issues were you facing at the time?
Well, the National Foreign Trade Council represents large multinational companies, like ones you've heard of, the auto companies, Microsoft, Google, DuPont, and mostly what we represented them on was international trade issues, because they all do business overseas, they all export and import, and they've got a whole range of trade interests.
So were they basically supportive of all the free trade deals we made? Is that it?
They were mostly for all of them, yeah. Uh-huh. Not always with the same degree of enthusiasm and not always for the same reasons. But in general, what they all knew was, you know, 95% of the world's customers are outside the United States. If you want to grow, you know, you gotta sell, you gotta export, you gotta get out there. And they all wanted to do that.
Yeah. Now, we hear the Trump administration talking about doing these trade deals with specific countries rather than you know, something like the TPP, where we go in with a bunch of other countries. Do you think that's a good approach, just bilateral trade agreements?
Well, no, is the short answer. It's not as efficient. You know, TPP, whatever you may think of it, that was one negotiation with 11 other countries. So he wants to have 11 negotiations. Right. It's going to take a lot longer. It's going to be more difficult. And one of the things we learned in a group negotiation is sometimes countries will make concessions to the group that they won't make to the Americans.
Right. Well, what President Trump says is that in the group negotiations, we're the ones making most of the concessions. Do you agree with that?
No, he's wrong about that. And I think if you look at the agreements, you can see that he seems to think this like we go one to one and we concede, you know, some in each one and we end up worse off. It doesn't work like that. It's a group effort and everybody gets together, you know, and tries to come up with something that meets everybody's needs. I mean, it's just a complete misunderstanding of the way that particular negotiating process works.
So what did we lose by not proceeding with TPP?
What we lost mostly was our position in the Pacific and our leadership in the Pacific. Because what is happening, and, you know, the Prime Minister of Singapore was talking about this yesterday, was, you know, they all think we're abandoning the region. And what that means to them is we're giving up the region and letting China move in.
Isn't he overstating things a bit? I mean, we're still trading with Asia, of course, right?
Well, a lot in Asia, symbolism is a big deal. You know, and when you walk out of an agreement like this, the symbol is, the message is, you don't care about them anymore. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are small countries that don't like the Chinese. They're intimidated by the Chinese. They spent 100 years playing us off against the Chinese, trying to maintain balance. You know, and if we leave, that makes them very nervous.
Okay.
And what that means to the Chinese is, they can move in and become the predominant economic power in East and Southeast Asia, which will ultimately be to our disadvantage because they'll use their rules, and their rules favor their producers.
Okay, but aren't these countries happy to get into bilateral negotiations with us now, though, now that the TPP is dead?
Well, they haven't said so yet.
Okay.
You know, we'll see. The first test will probably be Japan. but that's going to be harder than the president thinks. Mm-hmm. You know, the Japanese were part of TPP. They made a bunch of concessions, but they made concessions because there were 11 other countries, and they got something from some of those besides us. If it's one-on-one, they're not necessarily going to make the same concessions to us that they were prepared to make to everybody, because we can't give them everything they want by ourselves.
I'm talking to Bill Reich with the Stimson Center. Now, what you recently wrote about the this economic nationalism we're hearing about, you say it's the wrong way to go. The Trump administration says, look, many of their voters view these free trade deals as having hurt, especially our manufacturing base, and he's the president of the U.S., not of the world. What do you say to that?
Well, part of it depends on, you know, what kind of role in the world you want the U.S. to play. If you want it to withdraw into isolation, then sure, pursue an economic nationalist path. What that means is, over the long run, it means less trade, less involvement, and less growth, and less prosperity for our country. That's the road that he's going to head down in the name of you know, standing up for America. You know, it's a global world, and you got to negotiate with these people. You can't just bully them into submission. They're independent countries. You know, I just don't think it'll work.
Okay, now you say bully into submission. He'd say assert our power, really, our economic power, rather than acquiescing to these smaller countries. What do you say to that?
Well, tomato, tomato, you know. Those are nicer words than bullying, but, you know, he comes from a world, well, the real estate world, where leverage is important. Leverage in amongst sovereign independent countries is a little bit different than when you're dealing with, you know, a competing real estate firm. Real estate development tends to be win-lose, you know. I win, I get to build the building, you don't. Successful trade diplomacy has to be win-win. You got to make the other guy think that they're getting something, too.
Okay.
And if you can make him think he's getting more than you are, then you're an even better negotiator. I don't think the administration has figured that out, you know.
They'll point to all the jobs we've lost and say that we clearly were the losers. What do you point to? Where's the win?
Well, you know, the answer is, it's a hard argument to make, but the truth is it's more complicated than that. Look, we've been losing manufacturing jobs since 1979. That's when they peaked. We lost almost as many before NAFTA as we lost after NAFTA. You know, there's a lot going on, and most of those losses are due to automation, technology improvement. You know, if your listeners out there think that what he's going to do is bring back old manufacturing to Michigan, that's not going to happen. You know, these things don't unravel, you know, what's happened over the last 20 or 30 years that simply.
What do you think is ahead for manufacturing in our own state here in Michigan? What kind of future are we heading into?
Well, a lot of it depends on what the state does. You know, what America has always done and what America is better at than anybody else in the world is thinking up new stuff, inventing, designing, creating new things, and then making those things. And as long as we can run faster than everybody else, which means more R&D, you know, and more education, and more creativity, we'll be fine, because we'll be creating new industries that replace the ones that aren't there anymore.
Well, part of the concern is that we're developing this robotics industry. Are you equally concerned about what that'll mean to jobs here?
Well, yeah, people ought to be concerned. I mean, if you really want to be concerned, think about driverless cars. If driverless cars take off, that's going to be 3 million truck drivers that are going to be out of work. Mm-hmm. That's not insignificant, you know, and nobody's planning for that. And, yeah, I mean, automation, robotics, these are all big challenges. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so people are going to lose. People always lose. The question is, can we make sure that we're creating more winners than are losers in the economy? And can we help some of the people that are going to lose out become winners through better training?
Okay.
You know, there's a really interesting program that you guys ought to look at, because it's going on in the Ohio Valley. It's not that far away from you all, where they're taking former manufacturing workers and they're training them to be computer programmers, to be coders. And it's not Silicon Valley code. It's like industrial code for companies that, you know, that need sort of basic code. And these guys are making more money than they made in their manufacturing jobs.
Well,
and they got better benefits.
We're talking,
it's a training program.
We're talking to Bill Reinsch here with the Stimson Center. One last thing on the economic nationalism. Is there any aspect to that, any aspect to to being more protective of our jobs, or essentially trying to convince companies or persuade them economically to bring jobs to America? Any part of that you think that could work?
Well, I think that's a good idea. I mean, first of all, standing up for yourself when you're right and the other guy's wrong is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. We got a system of rules, and, you know, insisting on the rules and enforcing the rules is a good thing. That's also not new. You know, the last four administrations, going back to Reagan, they all did that. And if Trump is going to do it, great.
Okay, but do you think the rules we have basically make it easy and then even help companies move jobs out of the country?
The tax system we've got encourages companies to move out of the country. And the Congress is debating tax reform right now. If they do tax reform right, it might do something about that. I don't think there's a lot you can do on the trade side that will change that. There is a lot you can do on the tax side. Right now, the way the tax system is structured, there are incentives, you know, to move jobs and income overseas, and they could do something about that.
Talking to Bill Reinsch with the Stimson Center here on WILS. You also talk about the argument of the destruction of the administrative state. We're already seeing these moves to cut all kind of major cuts in departments, federal departments. And you say that's not going to work either. What's the problem with that plan?
Well, you know, it's you have to see how it unfolds. You know, it's easy to stand up and say, you know, big government is bad, government is bad. You know, the truth is people like government when it's helping them. They may not like it so much when it's helping other people, but when it's helping them, it's good. People like to have good roads and schools, you know, and, you know, taxpayers' money goes into that. It's government, not always the federal government, sometimes state government, you know, that builds the schools. It's government that builds the roads and bridges. The federal government, you know, that built I-75 or whatever the road is that, you know, that you guys have got out there, that built the interstate highway system.
Right, but
and then you got health care.
Yeah, and he's talking about things like, you know, basically taking apart the EPA and really reducing regulations specifically that were way too over-regulated.
Well,
do you agree with that?
In principle, no. You know, it's one of these things. There's things called public goods. You know, you want clean air and clean water. Most people like to breathe clean air. Most people like to drink clean water. I mean, clean water is a big issue in Michigan, in Flint in particular. You get there by government regulation, you know, and you can argue about a particular one, whether it goes too far or not. And I'm not an expert on EPA regulations, but the idea that there are common public goods out there that benefit everybody, and that, you know, that it's the government's job to sustain those, I buy that. I think that makes sense,
right.
And I think most people do, too.
Well, some would argue that that could be done on the state level. The feds really, we don't need such a huge federal government. Do you agree with that?
Well, if the states are, well, yes and no. I mean, if the states are ready, willing, and equipped to do it, sure. But increasingly, you know, just like there's a global economy, there's a national economy. It doesn't help anybody. You know, think about the auto industry. If every state had different auto emission standards, how are they going to produce cars? You know, if it's so many, you know, if your emission standard in Illinois is different from the one in New York, it's different from the one in Michigan, it's different from the one in Ohio, what you're telling Ford or Chrysler is they got to produce four different models of every car they make in order to meet different standards. You know, there's an advantage sometimes to having one national standard for the whole country.
Yeah.
And that's what the feds do.
Bill, let me ask you one last thing. The speech last night, did you have a chance to watch that yourself?
Most of it. I was a little late, but I caught like the last 45 minutes.
Now, how did you feel about what you heard last night?
Well, it was the same message, but the tone was much better. You know, it was the first time he really was saying, I'm the president of all the people, not just the people that voted for me. And that's an important message because he is the president of all the people. And I think it was received very well in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people said, for the first time, he's really sounding like a president. And then the question, of course, is this one-off or is this going to be a trend? We'll have to wait till the next speech to find out.
Do you think Congress will go along, especially with policies involving economic nationalism? Do you think we'll actually see anything instituted there?
I think they'll go along with bilateral negotiations. Mm-hmm. I think they'll probably go along. Well, it depends. He hasn't said what he wants to do on NAFTA, but they might go along with that. He hasn't put a lot of specific stuff forward. You know, they want to do a tax bill in Congress. He hasn't told them what he wants them to do yet, so it's hard to say whether they'll do it his way or some other way. You know, healthcare, you know as well as I do, they're having a lot of problems because all of a sudden a whole bunch of people have decided they like their healthcare and they don't want it taken away.
Mm-hmm.
And that's created a real problem for Republicans to figure out how to do that in a way that doesn't hurt people.
And he said it.
And Trump hasn't come up with anything either on that.
Right. Yeah. It might take a year or so. We'll see where they go from here. Bill Reinsch, distinguished fellow at the Stimson Center, former president of the National Foreign Trade Council, right here on 1320 WILS. Bill, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Good talk.
Yep.
Take it easy. Bye-bye.
6:30. When we come back, we're going to hear from one of the country's top doctors dealing with Lyme disease. It is a growing problem here in Michigan more and more each year. And the ticks are already out after a very warm February. We'll find out how you can actually heal yourself from Lyme disease next.